I'm Charles Egan, and I'm an associate professor at San Francisco State University. And I got involved in this Angel Island project when they formed a small research group to do a another take another look at the walls of the barracks, as they hadn't really been studied comprehensively for the last, say, 20 years or so. So we were going to do just take a new look to see, A, if we could find the locations of the poems that had previously been published, and B, if we could find new inscriptions in both Chinese and other languages, if we could try to transcribe those and translate them and put them into some kind of context. The way that they're arranged, the way that they're carved, national importance, not just for the Chinese community. Second thing which I found really interesting is as far as the poems go, the way that they're arranged, the way that they're carved, shows you that there was a real community effort in creating these things. It wasn't just individuals who thought up, a few lines and put them on the walls. People were writing poems in response to other poems. And, they could have been in the barracks at the same time with the other poets, or it might have been after a period of years. It really doesn't matter. You get this real sense of a community of people expressing sort of a community feeling that's really quite remarkable. It's quite a combination. It goes all the way from very melancholy, very traditional Chinese kinds of themes, homesickness, feelings about sort of loss of power, loss of self, all the way to very angry poems about political topics. There are quite a few poems there that show indignation at the Americans for locking them up. And hope that China will rise soon and be able to match America in power. It's quite a range. You even have a few that are really more they're less poetic sentiments than they are admonitions for other detainees to follow. For example, there's one poem up there, or I guess you may not even call it a poem because it's sort of in doggerel verse. Of an immigrant complaining about his money being stolen by another immigrant, and warning all the others around that there's a thief in the house. As regards its connection with Chinese poetry, one, even though these poems were written between 1910 and 1940, modern times, every one of them is written in traditional style, At the same time, in China, there were all these experiments with free verse and Western. That's what the myth has been. But what you find from the walls is at least some of the people out there were quite well educated. Nobody would know to how to write poetry like this unless they had had a decent education. The rules are too esoteric, for one thing. You see, there's a whole lot of use of historical allusions on the walls too, which definitely shows study of the classics. And also, a few of the poems are just very eloquent in Chinese. There's definitely a range. You go from poems that are somewhat more doggerel style to some which are clearly amateur efforts, to some that are very, very polished. Definitely, the whole group shows a certain educational level and how should I say? Understanding of the importance of sort of high culture. Sure, let me read one. This one is from was published in Ireland, so I'm reading the translation that was already published. It's called Random Thoughts Deep at Night. In the quiet of night, I heard faintly the whistling of wind. The forms and shadows saddened me. Upon seeing the landscape, I composed a poem. The floating clouds, the fog, darken the sky. The moon shines faintly as the insects chirp. Grief and bitterness entwined are heaven sent. The sad person sits alone, leaning by a window. That's Random Thoughts Deep at Night. It's number 13 in Ireland. Sure. I'll read it in Mandarin, though, not in Cantonese. Shen ye ou gan. Ye jing wei wen feng xiao sheng. Xing ying shang qing jian jing jing you. Yun wu chan chan ye an tian. Chong sheng qing qing yue wei ming. Bei ku xiang lian tian xiang qian. Chou ren du zuo yi chuang bian. Thank you. Thank you. So that's an example of one of those sort of homesick style ones. See if I can find one that's a little bit more, you know, have its impact. Let me read this one. I lean on the railing and lift my head to look at the cloudy sky. All the mountains and rivers are dark. Eastern Mongolia is lost, and the date of her return is uncertain. The recovery of the central plains depends on the youth. Only the tongue of Changshan can slay the villainous. To kill the bandit, we must wave the whip of Zudi. I'm ashamed to be curled up like a worm on island. I grieve for my native land. What else can I say? And there's a couple of the... This is appears to have been written in the 1930s after the Japanese had invaded. And the Changshan in that third couplet there refers to an official of the Tang Dynasty, Yan Gaoqing, who led an army against the rebels during the Anlushan Rebellion in 755 to 760. He was defeated and captured, but all during the execution he continued to revile the enemy. So the tongue of Changshan can slay the villainous. And Zhu Di was a general during the Western Jin Dynasty in the 4th century. And when non-Chinese peoples seized control of the Yellow River Valley in the 4th century, Zhu Di swore to recover the lost territories. One of his friends, also a general, once said, "I sleep with my weapon awaiting the dawn. My ambition is to kill the barbarian enemy, but I am always afraid that Zhu will crack the whip before me." Thus the reference means to try hard, compete to be first, and essentially to, you know, get back lands that have been taken. So, you know, those notes are also from the book, from the published book. Sure, let me give it a try. Ping Lan Xiang Shou Wang Yun Tian, Yi Pian Shan He Jin An Ran, Dong Meng Shi Xian Gui Wu Ri, Zhong Yuan Hui Fu Lai Qing Nian, Zhu Xuan Wei You Chang Shan She, Sha Zai Xu Yang Zu Di Bian. I try. It's actually a very long-standing Chinese tradition to to add personal expressions to place. You know, it's a whole different idea of what place meant. You know, here in America, we think when we go to the mountains, we want to go to an unspoiled place that humans have never been, right? We want to go to Yosemite, and it looks like nobody's ever been there before. But in China, the tradition was to go to a place and then think of what the great poet Li Bo said about it, or, you know, or remember how it had been used in history, or and so on. So this combination of sort of words and text with place is of longstanding tradition. If you travel in China, you'll see, you know, inscriptions everywhere, right? Up on the walls, sometimes of buildings, or carved into cliffs, you know, or on stone tablets. All of these are markers, in a sense, of the same idea. So it's not surprising, really. You know, it's remarkable here in this country to see this here, you know, but it's not surprising from the Chinese context.